I got to tell you about what happened at the gate waiting for my last flight home to Philadelphia.
Okay, yes. This is coming home from San Diego where we went to the Rubens. Yes. Yes, all right.
Yes. Well, I made it as far as Las Vegas. If you follow me on any of my socials, you'll know that because of a delay at the gate by my airline, I missed my connecting flight from Vegas home to Philadelphia by about maybe a minute and 30 seconds. I arrived just in time to see that little device I pull away from that you walk through the portable walkway. I saw that pulling back. So I said, hey, when can I get on the next flight? And they said, no problem, sir. We're going to get you on the very next available flight. I said, great. What time does it leave? They said 10 o'clock tomorrow night. It was currently 9 o'clock that night. So I had a 25 hour layover.
Oh.
Yeah. So I wandered around Las Vegas. I tried to gamble, Dave, to pass some time. I took a $20 bill out of my pocket and walked up to one of these machines. And I start looking at the buttons on the machines, and I realized I don't know what the buttons mean. I can't figure out what they mean. I don't know what to push. I don't know what. I realize, Dave, I'm too dumb to lose money in Vegas. So I wandered around for a little while and finally was like, this is stupid. I'm going to go to the airport, plug in at one of the tables next to an electrical outlet, and just, I brought that laptop. I'm like, I'm going to get some work done. At least I can't get any. I got a little bit of writing done, and I'll get some social media done.
I thought the FAA rules now they had to pay for a hotel room for you.
If it had been a flight, an official flight delay, they would have. But since it wasn't a weather-based flight delay, basically what happened, we pull into the airport, and there's another plane from the same airline at our gate.
Okay.
And we couldn't pull in until they pulled out. And that took 45 minutes. and my gate that I pulled into was in Terminal B. My next flight was taking off from Terminal A. And that's a pretty good-sized airport. So even with me running through the airport, dodging past people who are walking around with their nose in their phones, I was still late. And they said, the lady said, if I could, I would. But as soon as I put it through, they're going to deny it. For the hotel. So anyway, I go back to Las Vegas airport and I'm waiting for my flight to leave. Flight's going to leave in about an hour. So I'm sitting near in that area near the gate. And then this guy comes up and sits down next to me. This guy, early 20s, kind of looks a little bit like my older son.
Okay.
Same kind of build, same kind of medium build, has long wavy blonde hair.
Sure.
But he's wearing these heavy work pants, like heavy denim. And you can see there's like cuts and stuff worked into them. And it's not like, you know, the fancy cuts that you pay extra for to look like you're walking around in cut jeans. This is a working guy. And he's got a heavy work shirt on. It's also all banged up. And he's got a heavy, even his baseball cap was made of substantial material. He's got work boots clipped to his backpack. Big fireman boots.
Sure.
And he's sitting, plops down next to me. And I look over and I swear to God, he was coated in gold glitter from head to toe. And I don't mean just like a smattering of gold glitter, like maybe he had been to a bachelor party the night before. He looked like he blew C-3PO. He was coated in gold glitter. And he's leaving a trail of glitter wherever he goes. like the Tooth Fairy or something, right? So I sit next to him for a little while, and finally I just turned to him out of the blue and I said, listen, you can tell me to mind my own fucking business, but I gotta know, what's with the glitter? And he turns to me and laughs and ends up telling me a story. We end up talking for the next 30 minutes. Tells me a story. He goes, Dave, have you ever seen these guys that do sculpture with chainsaws.
Like ice sculpture kind of thing?
Ice sculpture, wood sculpture, but they use a chainsaw to do it.
Sure.
This is what this guy does. He's discovered it. He's become... It, listening to him talk about chainsaw sculpture is the same as listening to you and me talk about comics. He is obsessed with it, and he wants to do it for the rest of his life. And he had spent the summer studying under this world-famous chainsaw sculptor all summer. And today was his last day. And because he's got long, flowing hair, they had this thing where every time they walked past him, they would stick the leaf blower in his face and go, bah, 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 and make his hair go, bah, 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 right? Like they would just do that all summer just to kind of F with him, right? And to, as a big send off, they said, oh, we want to do the leaf blower thing just one last thing before you leave for the airport. And he said, yeah, sure, fine, whatever. They were, I'm sure they were, you know, doing the usual revelry that you do on the last day of a thing like that. And he showed me video. They put this freaking leaf blower within 6 inches of his nose. What he didn't know is that they had packed it with 4 pounds of gold glitter.
Oh, God.
And they
turned
this thing off and just sandblast this poor kid with gold glitter. It's all, it's caked. When I say it, it's caked on his face. He said it was hysterical. I said, didn't it hurt? He goes, yeah, it really kind of stung. I go, they could have blinded you with that. He's like, well, I had my eyes. You know how it is when you're 20.
Yeah.
I had my eyes closed. And and he goes,
never mind my lungs, which now have a third of a pound of glitter in them. Yeah.
Yeah. he burps fairy dust.
Yeah, exactly.
So he goes, I had to leave for the airport. And I said, they let you through TSA like that? I figured you'd set up all the sensors. He said, oh, TSA loved me. And we sit there and talk for the next 30 minutes. By the way, my new friend, Esteban Naus, Esteban. You can check out his work on Instagram. It's at Cheesecake Be Great. It's cheesecake, spelled as normal, the letter B, and then great, G-R-E-A-T. And you can see all of his sculpting done. He's this incredible young guy. And honest to God, I never had so much fun talking to a stranger at the airport. We had, because everything that, again, that we feel about comics, this is the only thing he wants to do. He wasn't even going to go to college until he said, I kind of had this girlfriend and she was going to college and I didn't want to be separated. I figured I'd lose her if I went to college.
Sure,
so
sure.
I went to college and he goes, you know what happened next? And I said, yeah, I know. You broke up freshman year. He says, yeah, but he found out I really liked college, he said. So he finished college and he discovered this chainsaw sculpting, and he's been all over the world at doing internships and apprenticeships and competitions. By the way, he doesn't call it an art. It's a sport. He says, this is the sport I want to do for the rest of my life. I go, sport?
A sport?
Says, yeah, it's a sport. Well, think about it. When you see the chainsaw is as long as his body.
Yeah, it's a really specific chainsaw. You're right. And they come to a point kind of a thing I've seen. Yeah.
Yeah. And I said, and evidently that, I mean, there's a risk of injury there, but he says, it's actually when we start to use the smaller tools that you really cut the hell out of yourself, as evidenced by the clothes he was wearing, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, Esteban Naus, my new friend, who's a chainsaw sculptor,
was covered in glitter. Imagine what you see in a Vegas TSA line going home. Imagine what they've seen. I mean, I've told you this joke before, but my wife and I, Gloria was giving a talk in Vegas, and they put us up in some hotel, and I'm on the elevator, and I swear to God this happened, right? So a man and a woman dressed for a wedding, ding, get on floor 23, right? And you go, oh, congratulations, going to your wedding. Elevator continues down, floor 21, ding, 2 girls in bikinis get on, ding, door shut, right? Elevator goes down, 2 more doors, ding, doors open up, like 4 huge nerds that were part of the American Pen Association, like BIC.
Oh my God.
Like, I don't know what they're doing. They're going to some convention, ding, doors close. ding, doors open back up again on like floor 18. It's a bunch of the drunkest guys you've ever seen for a bachelor party. I'm like, only in Vegas do you get these hotels. So like, imagine the TSA line when Esteban, behind Esteban there, covered in glitter.
Yeah. Can you imagine being in that elevator? It's almost like you're in a setup for a New Yorker cartoon. You know, all you need is one guy standing there saying, I suppose you're all wondering why I called you here together.
And on that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about getting covered in glitter and making comics.
And getting through TSA and making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, the editor of the Webcomics Handbook on Substack and the creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his pal Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave! Let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. Did you ever hear the story, by the way, of like some reporter that tried to track down the global supply of glitter?
No.
Because the output did not match the merchandising levels of glitter, right? And so they were God. Where the hell is all this glitter going? And it turns out that the vast bulk of glitter is being bought by the U.S. military. And they think it's for anti-missile technology, like one of those things that explodes and draws the missile towards it.
Oh, really?
I think that's what I'm half remembering the story. But anyway, that's Dave Kellett's half-remembered story that he read 3 years ago in the New York Times. Oh, a specialty here at Comic Lab, Dave Kellett's half-remembered stories. Oh boy! Oh.
Well, at least it's not a half-remembered movie reference like the last show. By the way, we got to talk with our listeners for just a second.
Oh my God!
Because we found out something about you listening to the show. Because what you don't know is what most of you don't know is that we told you the name of the movie at the end of the show, but we've been doing a stinger. We call it a stinger at the end of every show. Go back over, what has it been, 350 shows?
350 shows,
After we do the outro where we say, you've been listening to Comic Lab, blah, 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 Comic Lab is made possible by your support, the music fades out, and then we do a stinger, which is usually a little fun, little funny bit that we do at the end of the show.
15 seconds, 20 seconds, yeah.
You guys haven't been listening to any of those because we had we had dozens and dozens of people screaming on the Discord saying, it was The Arrival. You guys are trying to think of The Arrival. And Dave goes, well, now we know. Nobody's listening to those stingers.
Which is kind of a heartbreak because I not always, but there's a good chunk of them where the best joke in the show is in the stinger. Like by hook or by crook, it ended up being that's the funniest moment. So if you haven't previously been listening to the very end of the show, those are very often our funniest jokes. And now we know that you're not listening to them.
You guys aren't listening to any of it. Well, listen, it's going to be on my bucket list to start coming up with better ideas for podcast publishing. But you told me earlier that you've got a new bucket list.
Well, yeah. So coming out of the Reuben Award weekend, because, you know, we often said in recent years, we have been saying that our bucket list is just to keep doing what we're doing and that we don't want to retire. Those have sort of been the two truisms that Brad and I have been saying, is that we don't want to retire from cartooning because it's really a satisfying life and it keeps you alive longer. But also that our bucket list is just to do this for one more year and then one more year and then one more year. But I'll be honest, Brad, I came out of the Reuben Award weekend going, no, you know what? I want to win the Reuben Award at some point in my career. And I realized that there's no reason to be falsely humble about it. I want at some point in my 60s, probably, to win the Reuben Award, which is this big, gigantic award that was designed by Rube Goldberg. It was actually originally a lamppost that he had. And I think Milt Kniff said, like, let's turn that into the award. And so they recast it. And put an ink top at the top, and it weighs as much as the Emmy, the Grammy, and the Oscar and the Tony put together. It's gigantic. Yeah. I held Hillary prizes this year, by the way. Congratulations, Hillary, again. And it's gigantic and heavy, and I realized that I want one.
Yeah, I got to admit, I kind of had the same thought going home. It's like, I really want one of those awards at some point because it's kind of like it's something to shoot for. It's an accolade. It's something that kind of proves that you were here on the planet, even beyond the body of work that you leave behind. Right. I got to admit, I was very envious of that award when I saw it. I didn't allow myself to hold it. I know just with my luck, I'd be the one to drop it. But I did go up and touch it. I did have to put my finger on it because it's an immense piece of achievement. And listen, it makes me even more upset about last year. That's all I'm going to say about that. Although Jeff Keen put it a lot better than I could have put it. But I got the same thing. So that's also new on my bucket list. Is there anything else that's on your bucket list that wasn't there before?
Yeah. So once I crack the door open for what I'd really like to achieve, it sort of came in as a floodgate. And I'll tell you what I came up with a list. And here's my idea. Before I tell you what's on the bucket list, here's my idea for what I think I would like to do. There is a local trophy shop, a physical trophy shop, where you go in and you order for a baseball team. Like, I need 30 little awards with baseball guys so I can pass out to the kids or whatever, right? So I want to go in and get an 8x10 plaque made that literally has my bucket list items written on the plaque so that I cannot back out of it. I cannot skirt the what I've set as my bucket list goals. And then I want the plaque designer to cut a little hole in a checkbox next to each one. And I will physically tack a tack in each time I achieve one of them. You know what I mean? Because I love the idea of the permanence of it. And I also love the idea that I can sort of check one off as I get it done with a big comically red, push pin or something. Right. So the number one on the list, I want to win the Rubin Award at some point in my life. That would just be, it'd be so cool. It's going to take another 10 or 15 years, but that would be so cool. That's the big enchilada for childhood me. The other one is, let's be honest, I do want to win an Eisner. I don't know why. Every year I submit, and there's a reason why I submit, because I want to win one. And I don't know that I ever will. That's an industry that's set up very specifically towards the comic book industry, and I don't sell in that world, so I'm not really known in that world. So it's going to be a harder road to walk down, but I would love to win an Eisner, right? That's number two. Yeah. So those are the two awards. Those are the purely ego-based bucket list things.
Yeah.
And then, Brad, now that I've cracked the thing, I realize the other big thing that I would love is I would love one independent book. I want to set the stage for this. All of my books have been, aside from How to Make Webcomics, have been independently produced, meaning self-published. And because they're done that way, I can make a great living based on selling 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 copies of a book, right? It's a great living, but I never really do gangbusters on a single book. So it'd be fun to have one book in my career that sells 20, 25, 30,000 copies. You know what I mean? You could crunch the numbers in your head, Brad, knowing the cost of goods sold of a book that you printed at a volume of 30,000. That would be amazing profit. And God, it would just be fun to have one book sell 20, 25, 30,000 copies, right? That's sort of a bucket list of mine, is just have one that goes huge in a way that none of them have ever previously gone. Yeah. And then the final one is sort of a two-parter. I got invited once to go to Angoulême with my documentary Stripped, but I've never been invited to Angoulême or maybe even Japan's Comiket for my cartooning. Yeah. And I would love to go to either France or Japan invited for my cartooning. That would just feel because it feels like if somehow you've won over the French or the Japanese, you've really won at life, you know?
No, I've got that one too. I absolutely would want sometime before I'm dead to go to Angoulême, and I've been to Tokyo once. Any excuse to go back to Tokyo is a good excuse, as far as I'm concerned, and to go for a comic convention is even doubly sweet. So I sign off on that 110%. And also, just to mention that three out of your five bucket lists all have to do with leaving a legacy. It all has to do with either an award that becomes your legacy, or let's face it, selling 20, 30,000 books, that's legacy too.
God, you're
a
right.
A lot of your bucket list has to do with legacy.
I can't argue with that. That's true. They're all legacy ones. What do you say? Okay, yeah. Let me ask my friend. What do you think that psychologically is saying about me right now?
I think it means that you turned 50 just recently.
Oh, you rat bastard. You're right.
It takes one to know one. I'm way ahead of you on that score. And I absolutely have those thoughts. It's like, now what's going to happen after I'm gone? And who's going to remember me and stuff like that? And obviously the first on that list is your kids, you know, that's, and your family, that kind of thing. You leave the most lasting, the most important kind of legacy through that. But also just being the people that we are, we'd like to leave a little bit more than that. And that's us. That's us, A, trying to leave a legacy, and B, it's also, we've established our careers. We have done something that a lot of people, the great number of people, couldn't do or are trying to do. And now that we've reached a certain level of being able to plan the next year,
a repeatability.
Yeah. Now that we're at that point, it's like there's still some mountains that we want to conquer.
Yeah.
Right. It's like you don't get to this point in your life where you've conquered something that many people haven't been able to without having a thirst for that kind of adventure. And I think part of it is we still want to have that kind of goal to achieve. Like, in other words, if you don't have that, well, what's getting you up in the morning?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you don't have that, oh yes, I've established a professional relationship as a cartoonist. More people can say make their living in the NBA than people who can say in the United States that they're professional cartoonists.
Right.
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 Working as a full-time cartoonist. Lots of people can say they're professional, but full-time cartoonists. You don't get to that point without having a desire to conquer the next mountain.
Yeah, you're right. And I don't necessarily feel bad that I have these new bucket list goals suddenly. It sort of caught me by surprise that I came out of that Reuben weekend going, gosh, you know what? I want one of those. That's really neat.
Yeah.
I think it's because granted, we talk about imposter syndrome enough. And trust me, in this current Kickstarter that I just went through, Lord knows I have felt imposter syndrome a ton. But Brad's been on the phone for me on that. I also, to the counterbalance to that, is I do have a tiny bit of ego, and I sort of have proven to myself that I could build a career in comics. And now I think what it is I would like my peers to go, you did a good job. You ran a good race.
Good.
You know,
yeah.
You did good.
Yeah.
And I think that's also what it would mean. Like if the Japanese and French were to notice me, that'd be like, oh, wow, that guy, even America did good. You know, like that.
Yeah.
So granted, that one's more blue sky. But all right. Now, separate from all that, is the plaque idea stupid? Is the permanence of that stupid?
No, I don't think that's dumb. I think that's a very I think that's a very you idea, right? I take a look at your when I take a look at your whiteboard when I go to your studio,
yes,
and I take a look at my whiteboard. We have very different ways of organizing our thoughts. You are very structured, and you know, with your pre-printed magnets and stuff like that. This fits you to a T, right?
Okay.
In other words, having something that's you know, on shiny metal that's got those holes waiting to have thumbtacks put into it that you're going to put right in your line of sight when you're working. That fits how your brain works and how your own motivation works.
Yes.
I think that fits perfectly well.
Okay. Well, so long story short, those are my new bucket list goals for my comics career. And it's weird to suddenly have, I mean, some of them have been sort of simmering for years, but it's good to speak them out loud. That I would love to win an Eisner. I would love to win a Reuben. I would love to go to France or Japan as an invited guest. And I would love to have just one title do bonkers sales as an independent book. Are there any other last minute bucket list items that we missed for you, Brad, that we didn't capture?
No. I my bucket list is very similar. Although the big selling book, I'm not as crazy about like that, that I can do without, but the award thing, I got to admit, I would very much like to win a Rubin Award. But you mentioned in passing really quick that you had imposter syndrome from that Kickstarter.
Yes.
I know right now on recording day, I think you've got three more days left in your Kickstarter, right? or darn close. Yep. Are you anywhere near? Last time we both did a Kickstarter earlier in the year, we kind of did a report on our numbers, how social media was doing, what was working, what was not. And we shared numbers to the extent that we were able. Are you in that point yet, or should we earmark that for a future episode?
We'll earmark it, but the sneak peek is it has absolutely affirmed to me the utility of Instagram and Twitter is not where I need it to be. And so I think at the end of this summer, or rather, I guess we're in the end of the summer, I'm going to be leaving. I'm going to keep them open, but I'm going to leave Twitter and Instagram and no longer post on them, because Blue Sky, which at this point only has, I think, like 600, 800 followers, has already outstripped how many referrals it has sent to my Kickstarter campaign by like four times. And my Twitter account is about 15 times the size of my Blue Sky account. So you tell me which one is better able to service the needs of a cartoonist, with the quid pro quo of I will give as much free content as the social media platform requires. All I ask is that I'm not algorithmically limited, and that I'm able to link out, and that I'm not punished for linking out. And Blue Sky feels like the old Twitter. And so for that reason, that's the sort of sneak peek. And we'll talk about it when I have the final numbers. Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics.
I've got a quick update for you right now about Patreon that I wanted to share, and it is Patreon's new feature called Autopilot. And I was I guess I was in the beta testing group for this, although they haven't actually turned mine on yet. But I was really excited with the idea of this. So I wanted to share it and put it out there. If you're seeing notifications about it, I am encouraging people to try this out. Autopilot works like this. Patreon will send a discount to selected free members who seem likely to upgrade. I don't know how they determine that, but I'm sure there's an algorithm involved in there somewhere. Discounts will apply to the first month of membership. After that, they pay full price. In early testing, according to Patreon, Autopilot improved the rate of free to paid membership upgrades by an average of 19%.
Yeah, and I just love to see this innovation from Patreon. And I was saying, Brad, this offline, but I can feel Substack on their behind, and they're like, duh, we got to innovate. But also, this is just great for everyone. So like I turned it on as soon as it came up, and I think Brad did too. And by the way, Brad, I might as well say this on the show. I logged into Comic Lab. It popped up and I turned it on for Comic Lab. So I hope that's okay by you. there's business decisions being made in real time on Comic Lab. That's how we do things around here. But anyway, So I'm in favor of it. It's one of those things that's kind of a no-brainer, and I kind of don't see a downside to it myself. Yeah.
And I like what this is a part of a number of changes that Patreon has made recently, including they've instituted a recommendations feature that works very similar to Substack. Speaking of things that we've done without telling each other about, as soon as that popped up, I said yes and started, recommending people that had recommended us. And there's another feature that involved, I think, the free membership tier that Patreon has instituted. It long story short, they've been doing some really good things. And also, you know how I'm always kind of dogging Patreon for their analytics. They improved their analytics in one way that was a real eye-opener to me and put a button on the conversation that you and I had earlier in the year about free memberships. Remember how we were down on those?
Mm-hmm.
They now have, if you check your analytics, they'll tell you how many members have upgraded from free to a paid membership. I think mine was something like 30 in the last time I checked it out. But put those numbers in a jar by the bathroom sink, because I don't remember whether that was over 30 days or 6 months. I forget what the time frame was, and that's important. But it was really significant to me to see a large number of people who had upgraded from free to paid.
Yeah. And this goes back to some longstanding advice that Brad and I have always said, which is take those numbers and put them in a jar by the bathroom sink.
How many times have you heard that? That's some kind
of homespun down country. Take those numbers and put them in a jar by the bathroom sink. What the hell does that mean to anybody? Hey, gang, Brad Geiger here. Remember to take those numbers, put them in a jar by the bathroom sink. That's the advice Brad Geiger's giving out today, gang. It's a pre-coffee morning over here in Philadelphia.
That was literally free association. I have no idea where that came from.
Oh, take those numbers, put them in a jar by the bathroom sink. Oh, my God. And on that, no, but anyway, both Brad and I co-signed this idea of signing up for the new Patreon feature. I have not yet seen any specifics coming out of it, but it kind of is a no-lose situation. I feel like this matches what I perceive to be consumer psychology, which is the sort of you go to people with whom algorithmically it's worked in the past, and why not offer it? And as I've always said with Patreon, with the way they try to test these things is good with their beta testers. And also, I've seen some of the data, having gotten a sneak peek, and I've taken their data into my own career, and I put it in a jar by the bathroom sink, and I found it to be incredibly helpful.
Listen, one thing we have to take out of the jar is a question from one of our Patreon backers, because if we don't start answering questions, people are going to get mad.
I'm sorry. By the way, I'm sorry, my friend, that I give you grief like that. I'm not a good friend. I'm not a good friend. All right, well, let me jump into our first question over at patreon.com/comiclab. This comes in for our pal Rob. And Rob writes, "Hello, Brad and Dave. I draw a bunch of different comics and post them all under the same title. Sometimes they're autobio comic strips. Sometimes it's a sword and sorcery style gag strip. Sometimes a sci-fi short story or a 12-page one-shot. You get the idea. Switching between them keeps me engaged as a cartoonist, but even though I've been doing this for many years, building an audience has been really slow going. I update regularly with stuff I'm proud of, but I suspect the audience never knows what they're going to get, which could be off-putting. I want to build an audience, so do I pick a lane? What do you recommend, Brad?"
Yeah, well, listen, this is one of those times that you can see as the person's writing the question, they know the answer. And the answer is, if you're writing something that on one day is one thing and on another day, it's something so drastically different. And you listed 4 or 5 things there that were all night and day from each other. You know, deep down, that you can't possibly build an audience that way. You just can't. And it goes back to our conversation of branding earlier, that turned out to be one of our more popular shows. And I think maybe we need to talk about branding more often, not necessarily so much as marketing, but just to understand who you are as an artist. That's kind of what goes into the first step of branding. And it sounds like you haven't decided what you want to be yet. And that's a problem.
Yeah.
Because how can I follow you if you don't know who you are? I don't know if I like you. I liked you yesterday, but who you are today is somebody totally different. How am I supposed to follow that? Right.
Right.
So, you're not going to build audience doing this. It's going to be quite frankly, impossible to build, are really tough. And nothing's impossible, but holy cats, are you ever making a difficult path even more difficult by putting obstacles in your own path by doing this kind of publishing?
I really co-sign with Brad, but I think both Brad and I would be sympathetic to the idea that, listen, as artists, we all contain multitudes. Yeah. Brad is a single panel cartoonist. He's a graphic novelist. He's mm-hmm. a cartoonist that can work for all ages. He's a cartoonist that can work for adult NSFW. He's a cartoonist that's done non-fictional graphic novel stories about Philadelphia. He's done all sorts of and can do all sorts of stuff. He's an amazing cartoonist, right? But he's kind of had his pick. He's kind of had to pick his lane in his marketing because it's not unlike, this is a little bit of an unfair comparison, but it's not unlike fast food. If I pull into the lane with my car for Chick-fil-A and they go, today it's burgers. And you're like, no, but I came for chicken. Or if you go to Long John Silver and they're like, it's pizza day. And we're like, no, I wanted fish. What what I mean? Setting up expectations and then delivering on expectations is a big part of cartooning because much like the foods we choose, we have moods and tones and types of cartooning that we want for different moments in our life. There are times when I'm reading with the kids, for example, that I'll be reading a very different comic than when I'm reading by myself. Or if I'm in the mood for laughter, I go to I know where to go. If I want drama or mystery, I know where to go for that. If I want sci-fi, I know where to go. And so if people come to your site not knowing what to expect and not knowing what repeatedly to expect, it's just hard on a basic human expectation level to ask them to come back.
Yeah. Now, does that mean that you made a huge mistake by doing that for several years? Absolutely not, because what you did was something that we also encourage, and that is experimentation.
Yes,
right?
Yes,
especially early on.
Yes.
We want you to experiment. We want you to go out and, hey, I feel a little bit like this. I feel a little bit like that. The hope is that at some point you do find one that you feel is in your wheelhouse. You feel that you're best at, you feel that you get the best response because whatever you're doing is responding with an audience and so forth. So at some point we would encourage you to evolve past that and to narrow things down. And that doesn't mean that you can't not do those other things. In other words, Dave is absolutely right. I've done journalism, comics. I've done all those things that he listed. And I still do, for example, single panel comics, but my Patreon is built around Evil Ink and Evil Ink After Dark, right? Mm-hmm. Those single panel comics, I only put forth mainly kind of for myself because I want to sharpen that skill. So, but every time I put them out, it's kind of like a bonus for my readers. In other words, very few of my readers are signing up because of those single panel comics, right?
Right.
So
right.
Even in that case, you can still say, oh, I'm going to do these short comics about sword and sorcery, but I still like doing a 12-page one-shot every now and again. Well, after you get your business up and running with those sword and sorcery comics, then, and you still start to build your Patreon, you can then indulge your joy of that 12-page one-shot at that time and include it as a little bonus. But as long as you're trying to do all of these and make it your thing, that you're going to have a really difficult branding challenge there. Because again, nobody's going to know what the heck they're in for when they come to your site.
Yeah. And so just to reinforce what Brad said, the good news here is you have done exactly what we have recommended to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You have started with short stuff, right? That's something we say all the time is like, don't try to tackle a 300-page novel right off the bat. Start with short stuff. That's exactly what you've done. So number one, good work, okay?
Yes.
Number two, here's another thing. It takes all of us 10,000 hours to get good at something. You've checked off a lot of those 10,000 hours, probably varying your style, your genre, your mood, your tone. Also great. That's also something that Brad and I recommend. So now we're just saying pick a lane. Pick the one that really sparked with you. And if you're the kind of person that said, but they all spark with me, I'm going to bat you on the head. Pick the one that really sparked with you. You know that there's one that really sparked with you. And also, you can use your audience as the filter, too. What really sparked with you and got a good response?
Yes.
Build on that one, you know? And here's the thing. Because, like Brad said, your career does not end with this choice. Brad, in the years ahead, might still do the fantasy pirate comic he wants or the sci-fi comic that he wants. This is not the end of the road for you. You just have to pick a lane to start building the brand, to start making the marketing easier to people, to start making it easier for people to say, yes, I would like to go back and make this something that I either subscribe to or get on the mailing list for or join the Patreon for because it's repeatable and I know what I'm going to get. But you got to pick one to start for the next couple of years.
Absolutely. Now, we don't often do this, but the same person sent us another question that I'm going to wrap up into this topic because it's kind of the same overall topic, and that is branding. So I'm going to read the next question this person sent in because it's directly related. This person says, I made a midlife career change and they're becoming a public school teacher. And one thing that they keep drilling into us at the College of Education is this: be extremely careful with what you post online. I'd say I've always been somewhat discerning in my comic, keeping it PG or PG-13, but I've always had several profs say it would be a good idea to wind down the comic project. Any suggestions? My suggestion for that is going to be the same thing that I told you and that Dave told you in the previous example, and that is you need to rebrand. And part of that rebranding for you is going to be, in your case, picking a pen name.
Yeah.
That's the obvious answer to this question.
Yep.
If you're going to be a teacher, you don't want to use your given name. You want to come up with a pen name. And as you're rebranding yourself, you're going to make that pen name part of your rebranding, right? Don't you agree, Dave? But this is a clear-cut case for a pen name.
When it comes to teaching, for whom you're going to be interacting with parents and kids, I absolutely think cartooning under a pen name, because no one needs any of the hassle, neither the parents nor you nor the kids, of your comics in any way raising a kerfuffle. So just, yes, absolutely. This is a pen name scenario. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's a billion artists in history who have done wonderful work under a pen name. So now the follow-up question I have for you, Brad, on this is, given the fact that these 15 other short form titles that they did over the course of years never really gained traction, and given the fact that they now have to go to a pen name, which we very strongly recommend, would you recommend, as a parallel to taking on a pen name, bringing down all the archives and files of the stuff that never gained traction anyway that was under their own name?
That was going to be my next topic, and you're absolutely
was it really?
Right.
Okay.
Yep. That's what you got to do. Number one, this is very common. In fact, I saw this on the Discord server earlier today, as a matter of fact. Somebody was asking whether they should take a break and build their buffer up because their buffer had been depleted. And there's somebody who just started doing a comic this year, right? This very, very early. And this person is torturing themselves because, and this is a direct quote, I don't want to lose what little momentum I have, right? So they're facing maybe posting substandard stuff that they rush through to get done, because they're so wound up with that momentum that they've got.
Right.
We are all, and it's very natural, it's very normal to be concerned with momentum. And I'm sure this question asker that's writing today's letter is worried about whatever momentum that they've got behind this thing, that people aren't going to know where to find his stuff if he starts publishing on our new name. And I got to tell you, I really do believe this. Any momentum that you may lose by doing either one of these things that we're talking about, either a pen name or taking a break to build your buffer back, any amount of momentum that you're going to lose is going to be gained by you posting good work. That is a momentum builder.
Yes.
Posting great work will build back any of that momentum that you think you've lost. And all those people that you think are reading this comic, that's one thing that we're going to, instead of going through this, let's just call it a Jekyll and Hyde comic. One day it's one thing, the other thing it's another, right?
Right.
Any momentum that you think you're losing by stopping this Jekyll and Hyde comic and taking them all off web, which I suggest strongly as well, you're going to gain by doing focused, good, well-branded work. And putting it out there on the web, you're going to catch right up. And And by the way, just I'm not gonna like point this out and make you embarrassed, but just between you and me, that URL that you got with that name that you came up with that you think is great, get rid of that too. That's a horrible name. while you're getting rid of things, get rid of that name. Come up with a pen name. Think of some better branding. Think of something clearer that people can figure out when they see it. This is a chance, if you really want to do this, to make a clean sweep, get rid of all of that stuff. And don't worry about the momentum that you're going to lose. You're going to build that back by doing focused, good quality comics.
I co-sign all of that. And what a clearinghouse of advice from Brad Geiger on three or four different questions in terms of like, how many titles? Do I do a pen name? Do I use this URL that I have? No. And Brad's like, nope. Okay.
It all comes down to kind of the same issues, doesn't it?
Yes. It's about now you are choosing a lane, you're focused. Yes. You're focused under a pen name, which, by the way, also allows for a certain amount of creative freedom in the sense that if something veers a little bit more off of PG-13R, it's fine because it's under a pen name and all the other stuff will be taken down. And so you will find in your writing a certain sort of lessening of the load, in the back of your mind in terms of what you can write, where you can write, how you can write. So, the short version is I co-sign everything Brad said there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Dave, let's take our next question from a Comic Lab backer. This comes in from patreon.com/comiclab. And it says this: Dear Brad and Dave, what is your opinion on the not made with AI branding on a product? You see some of them that say not made with AI or made with human intelligence and so forth. Recently, a couple branding movements have appeared. In Substack, there's a made with human intelligence seal, and some artists have started to use and also found a human-made icon that is being used around on Itch.io. I would love to hear your wonderful opinion on this and how it can be perceived, or if using it could cause some confusion. Thanks for your insight. So, Dave, made with human intelligence icons on your work. Thumbs up, thumbs down, or ambivalence?
I'll be 100% honest. In general, yeah. I'm ambivalent on it. Like, it's fine if you want to do it. I won't do it with mine, even though mine is 100% human made and there's no AI involved. I almost want to turn this back to you right away because I want to say, like, am I wrong for kind of not caring? Like, I will not and do not use AI, aside from some experimentation that we all did when it first came out, just to see what it could do. But I won't use AI. I don't enjoy the process. I actually find it slows me down rather than speeds me up. But I don't know. Let me flip it around. So no, the short answer is no, I won't be using that tag. I feel like if I did draw myself with, made with human intelligence, I'd draw myself looking like a doofus and not very intelligent, and that would be funny. Yeah. What do you think? Will you be using a made with human intelligence badge, Brad, on your stuff?
No. And I have a hard time believing that everyday people really care one way or another. It's something that artists feel passionately about.
Yeah.
But even watch, like, I've been on Substack recently, which is writer dominated, right?
Right.
And you will see writers who are very passionate about being against using AI for writing, and they will use an AI image to put at the top of their Substack post at the drop of a goddamn hat. They have no problem with using AI art, but don't you dare use AI writing. And I also know artists who have no problem plugging a prompt into ChatGPT. We're very fickle that way. We're passionate. Don't step on my toes. But that artist over there, that creative person, you can step on theirs all you want. You'll see tons of AI art on stuff that that writers post on Substack. It's really quite confusing to me. And if we can't even toe the line, as artists, as writers, as creative people, if I as an artist can't say, well, no, AI writing is bad. If you as a writer can't say, no, AI art is bad. If we can't get it straight, what makes you think that everyday people who don't fucking care are gonna look? It's all they care about is it good? Am I interested? Am I entertained? And they're going to scroll right past. Remember, they've got a near infinite supply of content on their phones Do you really think they care where this comes from? All they care is, did it entertain me? Do I think it's good? They don't care where it comes from. I guarantee you, your average person out there doesn't care. And I mean average person, not a person with a connection to creative process. Your person who is a creative consumer, not a creative creator, they don't care. So no, I'm not going to do this. And I'm going to warn you, if you are going to make one of these freaking icons, not that I think it's a perfectly good thing, but here's conversely, do I think it's going to hurt? Nah, I don't think it's going to hurt, except in this case. If you're going to, a lot of these icons set type on a curve. You know what I mean? It's a circular icon. And so the words take place over a circle, a circular baseline inside or outside of that icon. And it'll say made with human intelligence. And the type is on a curve. Here's the problem.
I know where you're going with this.
Here's
type
the problem
on a curve.
With that. It is insanely difficult to do good typography on a curve. Even if you're doing digital typography, 9 chances out of 10, some of those character pairs have to be hand kerned. You've got to have Nate Picos level typography. Even to say typographer, you've got to have Nate Picos level typographical skills.
Good God.
To put a word on a curve.
Yes.
And if you're hand lettering it, heavens to Betsy, I guarantee you, you're fucking it up because you don't have, 99% of you don't have those skills. And as a result, a huge amount of those made with human intelligence icons look like shit because you can't hand lettering on a, you can't do that hand lettering on a curve without having really, really excellent typographical skills. And even if you're doing it digital, it's tough. And as a result, here's the thing. I don't have to know much about art to know what I like, right? That's the old axiom. I don't know art, but I know what I like. But typography screams when it's poorly done. Yeah. Even that person I was just talking about who really doesn't care whether it's made with AI art, if they see something that's lettered crappy, they know that something's off. They might not be able to put their finger on it, but they know something's off. And all of you folks who have hand lettered made with human intelligence logos that are poorly lettered, you are hurting all of
you're
us.
Hurting
you're hurting all of us. Sit down before you fall down, for Christ's sake. If you've got an H, and you know that crossbar in the H that connects
yes.
the two
yes.
standy up ones?
Yep. Yep.
If you've curved that line because you think it needs to curve with the baseline, find your mom and tell her she raised an idiot. This is bad typography, and you're making us all look bad. So yes, if you want to do a made with human intelligence icon, by all means do it. But if you're going to set type on a curve, please, please do me a favor. Do it right.
I have to share this because it's super related to this. A couple years ago, do you remember, it was like 5-6 years ago when Space Force was first incorporated, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So Space Force released their badges, and as is true with a lot of military branches, that there's a lot of circular badges, right? And then they had a subset, which was Collections Intelligence Space Force. And I remember just happening to see this badge because these are ostensibly, I mean, they're all like Ivy League trained men and women yeah. that are now in Space Force. And the badge, the kerning on this curve, Brad, looks like someone brought it into Microsoft Word. And I was like, you're flipping Space Force. Take a second. Somebody get yeah. the Illustrator out and figure out how to put text on a curve. I almost emailed them and said, like, I know some people that could fix this for you. Don't yes. make 10,000 badges for this real quick.
Yes.
Just let us fix this before we could, because I was so disturbed that, like, Space Force looks like idiots with this stupid badge that it didn't kern right. And I'm sure they're all wonderful people. Like, how it's a very specific skill set to set type on a curve. Anyway, all yeah. that being said, I've seen the ones that Brad is referencing where it looks like mega human intelligence. And you're
oh
like,
my
put
God.
The beard down and stop yeah. trying to kern on a lot of curve. Like,
and before you send me all these icons that do have curved crossbars, yes, I know there are certain instances in which it can be done. There's certain fonts that accept that. I know there's outliers. But I'm telling you, don't do it. Don't do this freaking type on a curve.
But also, I really want to come back to this point, though, because I think there's a lot of truth to this.
Yeah.
Is when people say, like, don't you dare do writing by AI, but it's okay to put an image, or don't you dare do an image, but it's okay to do my resume using AI, because it's very much rules for thee, but not for me kind of a scenario.
Yes.
And
yes,
I feel like if you pressed a lot of artists, they'd be like, oh, I'm fine with AI replacing this or that job that I've never heard of before, or that I never would have considered for myself. But don't you dare come for art. And there you be, and I'll be honest, I'll put myself in there so that other people don't have to be put on the spot. I have my own hypocritical nature about how AI can and can't be used.
Yes.
I'm a hypocrite. I don't want it to be used for art, but I'm fine if it does basic functions of human society. And yet that might replace jobs. And that's the way people feel about art. They're like, I got the job done. I did some AI plugins and I got this prompt. And then now I have an image for my Substack, and who cares? And in the meantime, every artist we know is like railing against the truth. I'm just saying, recognize your own hypocritical nature. I'm recognizing mine, that we're all very much rules for thee, but not for me when it comes to AI.
I've seen it happen so many times. Somebody uses an AI illustration for a book cover, and they'll get called out on it. And they'll say, and by the way, this is not wrong, they'll say, hey, I can't afford to hire an illustrator, and I need a book cover.
Right.
What do you expect me to do?
Right.
Right. What do you want me to do? This is here. It's a tool that I can use. It's a perfectly fair point. What do you expect him to do? But certainly you don't want him to do a book that's all a typography cover, because that's also a problem.
We've seen Space Force at work there. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So we get it. We get it. None of these are easy examples. And if they come up with a artificial intelligence that is ethically sourced, right?
It's which eventually trained. They will, maybe, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to. Like something that, okay, they paid for the copyrights that they're infringing currently, and they're paying to have use for this. And even that, you and I both know logically and rationally, it's not going to be something that actually helps the creators. But if they had an ethically sourced AI, I could sign off on that so much more easily. But until then, like Dave says, unless you're literally becoming a Luddite on this issue, you're a hypocrite just along with the rest of us.
And I think, tell me what you think about these next 2 points, because I think they're right. I think two other things can be true about AI in this current moment. One, I feel like we're very much experiencing an NFT-like moment where there's a lot of VC capital and there's a lot of Microsoft money and Google money and Apple money, and they're all pouring a lot of money into OpenAI and the rest. But I do think, given the extraordinary costs and energy requirements of AI, I think there's going to be a big pulling back and frankly, a lot of wasted VC money on AI. And it's going to a little bit collapse like NFTs collapse. But my second truth, I think, also is that in the long curve that is human culture and civilization, AI is here to stay, and it's only going to get bigger over a longer curve of time. So in the short term, we're absolutely going to see AI crash and burn a little bit because the VC money won't have panned out in time, much like the dot-com boom for those that lived through that. And maybe Brad and I are the only ones who lived through that. Or the NFT crash of a couple of years back where the VCs didn't get the money back in time, and so they all kind of crashed out. I a little bit feel like that's going to happen in the short term. So I think in the short term, we're going to have it calm down a bit. But I do think in the long term, this is here to stay. And we all have to start making certain peace with the fact that for certain things, we're all going to be using it in small ways. But gosh, not in art, because that's the one we're allowed to be hypocritical about. And, you know, I don't know.
It's so funny. It's so funny to watch. Well, you asked me what I thought, and I agree with you 100% with everything you said. And it comes down to long term versus short term, right? In the long term, all of us as artists are going to have things that we have to grapple with that are going to change right in front of our faces.
And before you do what you're about to do, I want to say this, because we're going to hear it if we don't say it. I want to super reinforce, Brad and I are not pro AI. We will not be using AI or art, because I know people come for artists that say anything vaguely like, well, got to come to peace with it. I'm just saying it's a form of realpolitik, is that you have to understand that it's here with us permanently now as a society, and it's going to be an imperfect world in regards to AI. I will not be using it. Brad will not be using it. We are not promoting it or condoning it, especially the way it has been unethically sourced thus far and used thus far. But I'm just saying it's going to be an imperfect world, and we have to be careful with the potential for being hypocrites in this world. Now go ahead and do what you're about to do that you were clearly broadcasting and that I absolutely picked up on, but keep going.
Man, I thought I was going to sneak that in. Well, in the short term, you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my friend Brad Geiger, who is strongly anti-AI. I just want to reinforce that, because you have no idea the hate mail that people get when you say, well, we got to come to peace with it. He's the editor of webcomics.com, and he's the creator of Evil Inc. at evilcomic.com.
Now, if you're turning off the podcast, you're turning it off too easy. We got more stuff coming. You got to keep listening, because you got to be able to hear me say, and my friend Dave Kellett, the co-director of the comics documentary Stripped, and the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com, and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
You keep going. You don't stop yet. We're almost there. Keep going. If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. You may hear your review featured on a future episode.
And Comic Lab is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So I will go ahead and say that twice. patreon.com/ put it in a jar by the bathroom sink. See, this is why you wait. And then we're not even at the stinger yet. This is why you wait.
We haven't even brought out our A game yet. That was just slop. We haven't even planned anything.
For me, it's fun to imagine the little mouse running on the wheel in Brad's brain, like trying to want to just put that point aside and say, like, yeah, just forget about those numbers. But he starts the sentence, right? So take those numbers, and this is where the mouse starts to panic and run on the wheel so fast. But the wheel is like, you can see the sparks. It's like breaking off of its hinges, and the mouse is like, oh, shit, oh, shit, oh, shit. And then out of Brad's mouth comes, put them in a jar. And you're like, oh, that doesn't really do anything. Where can we go from here? Put them in a jar. And what's a useless place we could put that jar? And put it by the bathroom sink. And then the mouse just drops dead on the wheel. Like, I got nothing else. That's the best I can offer.
My whole skull is just littered with dead mice.